Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Chakra Way Meditation Podcast. Today, I have a guest, Billy Lahr. Now, Billy is a mindfulness coach, and he's also the host of the Mindful Midlife Crisis Podcast. So I feel like, this is going to be an interesting conversation. Billy's currently in Thailand, and he's a bit of a digital nomad. I'm just fascinated to know more about what you do, Billy. So welcome and thanks for joining me today.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no, it's good. So a mindfulness coach, this is your sort of main title. Tell me what brought you to mindfulness? Because mindfulness is one of those things that I think is quite a big umbrella term. I certainly feel like it takes in meditation and a lot of work that I do as well, but I don't label it as such, but I love it. So how did you get there? Where did it come from in your life?
Yeah, I started practicing mindfulness because I was struggling with anxiety and depression, and that was manifesting into suicidal ideation. So I thought, you know, I need some help. I mean, there's very clear that I need some help here. So this was 2013, so a little over 10 years ago. And I went to see a therapist, and her name is Mindy Ben Dixon. I always say Mindy Ben Dixon's name anytime I talk about how I learned about mindfulness, because in my opinion, not only has mindfulness changed my life, but it most likely saved it as well. And I owe a great deal of gratitude to Mindy for introducing me to this mindfulness practice. And I think as your listeners, take in more of my content, they'll recognize that I'm pretty high anxiety still. I'm pretty high intensity. I'm pretty high energy. And I tell people that I practice mindfulness so that I can be this level of obnoxious, because if I didn't, I'd be an out of control asshole. So that's kind of how I came to mindfulness, and how I practice mindfulness, and how I use mindfulness really to sort of alleviate these feelings of anxiety. I still have stress. I still have anxiety attacks, all that sort of stuff. But the intensity of them is far less than what they used to be. So I'm in experiencing them, I am able to catch on to the somatic experience of it, where I feel anxiety in my body and what narratives are starting to pop up. And I can hit the pause button on those and say, hey, you're not this. You are just thinking you are this, and you are not your thoughts. So where is this really coming from, so that it doesn't manifest into some sort of reality that you are this and that you are incapable of this? Really, you are just feeling this, and that is normal, and that is okay to feel all of the feelings. There's nothing wrong with it. I always get tired of when people say live life with no regrets. No, have regrets. Regret is normal. You should have regret. It's just a matter of how long do you linger in that regret? Are you able to use regret as a way to reflect, learn, and grow? And that goes for all emotions. Same with anger. Same with joy. We can use all of them. But if we are not tapping into the entirety of the emotional experience, then what tends to happen is that we see an emotion as negative, and then we start to push it away. And that emotion is much stronger than what we are. And then it just pushes its way back in, back in, back in. Or it lurks in the background and then pounces on you like some predator. And you realize that, oh, this is now hitting me in a moment when I didn't want it to hit me, when you had the opportunity to be present and aware of when it was there. And not necessarily deal with it, but just sit with it, right? To sit with it, to welcome it in for tea, as I like to say. We welcome our emotions in for tea. For people who are from the States and they watch the old TV show Cheers, every time Norm walked into the bar, everybody yelled, "Norm!" and they welcomed him, right? So that's what we do with our emotions, is that we welcome them in regardless of what, you know, how they are making us feel. And for me, in doing that, that I'm able then to sort of navigate the complexities and yet the possibilities of what those emotions are trying to communicate to me.
It's so clear what you're saying is this beautiful self-awareness, having and finding a level of self-awareness where you can observe what your thoughts are doing to you. And I think that this is such a massive key to finding peace, because once you can ideally, you know, notice, you go, oh, I'm having that pattern is showing up, that narrative is showing up, and you can take a step back and go, okay, I'm feeling this, or I'm, you know, all of that nonsense is coming back into me. As soon as you see it, rather than just investing in it, the battle's kind of almost won, because then you can go, okay, I see what I'm doing, and I can just open the back door and let it out. Because you're absolutely right, you have to just sit with the emotions, however bad they are. And I know that, you know, when one of my friends or my kids or whatever are sort of feeling a horrible emotion, I'm like, it's okay to feel that. That's just part of the human experience. You want to feel everything. How can you understand what joy and happiness and love and all of those good things feel like if you don't have anything to contrast it with, if you don't have the crappy days where you're feeling horrible? You know, it's part of the human experience to feel everything. But to understand that, rather than just get lost in the woods of the feelings, to actually just recognize that is the big battle, because we can get so lost in those woods of the narrative, the story, you know, it's a battle. So how do you deal with that battle? Obviously you've learned some techniques to notice when you're beginning to fall back into that narrative or into those emotions and get invested in them, if you like. So how do you drag yourself back into that realization of, oh yeah, it's okay, I can deal with this?
Yeah, but that's an interesting question. At this point, it almost feels automatic. You talked about that, it's self-awareness. So I'm not going to lie. I'll go days of wallowing sometimes. As a digital nomad, people have a tendency to romanticize this idea of traveling around the world and working. But there, and listen, and I always preface with it, I am eternally grateful that I have this opportunity to do this. But what comes along with that are these feelings of isolation and loneliness if you're solo traveling. And it's like, well, yeah, but you get to meet all these different people. You do. You get to meet all of these different people and you make these connections with them and then they go.
Yeah.
Being a digital nomad is a very transient lifestyle.
You're living at this pace. You got to find a hotel every time. And it's for me, you know, what's coming up for me is the thinking of like, well, you don't have a solid base, you know, that foundation, that grounded home is not a thing. So you've got to find that home really deep within. And that's hard work.
It very much is. And what, you know, one thing that I realized last year, I was moving around and there was a 2 month stretch where I was in for a week. I was here 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 for a week. And then by the time I got to Tokyo, which was the number one city in the world that I most wanted to visit, I was going to stay there for a month. I was completely fried. Because I had just burnt myself out. And that's when kind of this realization, when I finally had actually allowed myself to sit, there was this realization that you have burnt yourself out. You're moving around too much. You have a need for stability. And these are all things that I knew before. I know that I like stability. I know that I like routine. I know that I like structure. And I was going against my flow. And that this is the go with the flow crowd. They drive me absolutely bonkers because they, the interpretation of go with the flow is that you just, you know, just whatever happens, happens, man. And that's not, to me, what go with the flow actually means. Go with the flow, in my opinion, means that you understand yourself so well that you know what makes you tick and you know what moves you and motivates you in a way that feels productive and fulfilling. And for me, I worked in education for 21 years. Bells told me when to start and stop my day, and I loved it. That's my flow. So there are the go with the flow crowd who would absolutely hate that idea of structure and routine. And oh my gosh, bells tell you when to start and stop your day. Oh, their nightmare. You know what my nightmare is? Trying to find a hotel when I land in a city.
Yeah.
No, I don't like that. So when you asked me before, like, how do I catch myself in those moments? It's really been a labor of love and self-awareness over this time where I've practiced mindfulness, where I'm now just able to catch myself in those moments and recognize, hey, you're not in your flow. You're trying to swim in a different flow. So let's get back into your river because this is your flow right here. Mm-hmm. And so when I recognize that, and like I said, sometimes it takes a little bit of time, but when I recognize that, then I am able to get back into my flowing river, and it's my flowing river. And I remember having kind of that realization when last year I was in Seoul and this guy asked me, oh, you're traveling. Where are you all going? And I said, well, in January, I'll be here. And in February, I'll be here. In March, I'll be here. In April, I'll be here. And he was like, well, that's your problem. You're doing it wrong. I was like, what? And he said, you have everything all planned out. You're doing it wrong. And it took so much self-restraint not to want to punch him in the mouth. Because it's like, no, this is my journey.
How dare
you critique my journey, my flow? I say that to go with the flow people because it's like, listen, if you want to go with the flow and you wake up the next day and you're like, ah, you know what? I feel like going to the city or that, more power to you. But don't diss my flow of wanting to know where I'm going to be a week or two from now.
Yeah.
Because in my opinion, it's if I want to be somewhere for 2-3 weeks and then plan to go to another place, I'm not robbing myself of an experience at all. For me, I know that if I am somewhere for 3 to 5 days, it's just in my nature to pack too much in those 3 to 5 days. I'm going to want to see and do it all because I'll never know when I get back. So now I've decided the slow travel, wherever I go, I'm going to be there for at least a month because there are things that I'm going to want to do professionally and things that I'm going to want to do personally. So I'm going to take my time. And because I'm in this amazing situation now where I, you know, the fruits of my labor have paid off to where I can do this for now, I'm going to take advantage of it in that way and live it and be in my flow. Yeah. And that has taken, and it still takes intentional, it takes an intentionality around understanding what makes me tick. And I think that I believe that self-awareness is one of my superpowers, almost to a detriment, because sometimes that does get me into the spiral of that tornado of negativity a little bit. But then that self-awareness kicks in and pulls me back out of it too. So a very long roundabout answer to your initial question there, but we made it.
No, it's a good answer. And it's really interesting because it's very personal as well, which, you know, people will be able to obviously to relate to that. And I'm just drawn back to what you said about going with the flow, because for me, when I'm looking at in the chakra work, going with the flow is very much sacral energy. You know, it's that sort of watery, creative thing of going with the flow. And when I reading somebody or talking to somebody about, you know, whether they're able to go with the flow, for me, it's more about not being resistant. I totally get you about the go with the flow, dude, just wake up and go where the wind blows you. Like, yes, that works for some people, not for others. I'm the same. Like, it would stress me out hugely if I was to arrive in a city. I had 3 days and I didn't know where I was staying. And like, there's no joy in that. If you know where you're staying and you know you've got time to relax and enjoy the culture, so I'm with you. But it's an interesting take on that term, go with the flow, because I'm thinking like, if you can go with the flow, then you're taking the resistance out of your life somewhat, you know, and not being blown about by the wind, but just being kind of when a difficult or new situation comes up, you don't just go, oh no, I can't resist. Oh no, too scary. And you put up your barriers. You know, having the barriers down so you can go, okay, so I'm flexible. I can kind of work my way with this. I can do whatever I need to do. So I think it's a, you know, this finding this self-awareness is really, really personal, obviously, duh, you know, but finding what works for you is, I think, the key here. And that's what mindfulness or self-awareness will gift you, is this self-knowledge. And I think that's, you know, that's the point of life, isn't it? Is, you know, enjoying the ride as you get to know yourself better and you get to understand all the lessons that you need to learn in life and grow from that. One of the things that I was really interested in reading your bio and, you know, doing a little bit of research about you is you say that you don't like it when people say follow your passion.
Yeah. Oh, this gets me so heated.
Okay, let's get into it, because, you know, we can go back and forth on this, because
all right,
I consider myself to be following my passions in my life.
All right.
It makes me hugely happy. Not very rich, but very happy.
Yes.
So come
yes.
on. So have this out. Billy.
I am willing to bet that once I lay this out,
okay,
you'll see what I mean by follow your passion. So to me, passions are a byproduct. And so what are they a byproduct of? first understanding what your strengths, your weaknesses, and your needs are. So we start there. We understand we have this self-awareness of what our strengths, weaknesses, and needs are. What fulfills us in terms of our needs, right? We talk about love languages in there too, but just things that creatively, what are things that we need to do? And then secondly, passions are a byproduct of our curiosities and our exploration of those curiosities. What is it that we want to learn more about? We understand what those curiosities are, and we dig a little bit deeper, and we spend time with those curiosities. But then how do we nurture those curiosities? Well, we nurture them with our community, with our crew. We find people who have those same interests, those same curiosities, and in turn, they fuel a deeper curiosity. They fuel maybe even healthy competition to where we want to build into that. So then that leads us to purpose. So when we understand our strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, threats, when we understand our curiosities and we explore those, and then we find our community, that leads us to our purpose. Then, how do we turn purpose into passion? We take purpose and we multiply it by consistency, discipline, patience, and self-compassion. That is passion. So, when I think about this idea of follow your passions, I think the word passion gets conflated with hobbies. What am I interested in right now? And what I have found is that people who follow their passions, they generally burn out very quickly when it comes to that. So for me, when it comes to passions, that's a byproduct. You don't know what your passions are unless you actually take a deep dive into what your strengths are and really understanding that, exploring your curiosities and finding a community. But then that's just purpose. What turns it into passion? That commitment to consistency, discipline, patience, and self-compassion. I oversimplify it by saying, if you're willing to do it on a weekend for free, that's a passion, because you're willing to put the time and energy into it. You and I are podcasters. We're making negative dollars doing this. We are probably both paying to podcast, and yet here we are. And I don't say this lightly. I am passionate about podcasting. I can hear you. You are passionate about podcasting. But it's because we understood that we have this gift of gab. We have this gift of connection. That's our strength. So then we learned more about what it means to podcast. And then we reached out and we connected. You and I connected with each other. You connect with your guests. I connect with my guests. And then weekly, you put out an episode. Weekly, I put out an episode. That's consistency. That's discipline to put that all together. You put out a meditation every single week. Consistency. You have the discipline to record that every single week. And I bet, like me, if you listen back to your first 3, 4, 5 episodes, you would just cringe at what you heard and what those episodes sounded like. But you now look back and you have self-compassion. You say to yourself, I was in just learning. I knew nothing. But over time, patiently, I got better. And I am so passionate about being a podcaster. You did not follow that passion. That passion is now a byproduct, because if it wasn't something that you're passionate about, you just stopped doing it. So that is my very algorithmic analysis of what it means to follow your passion.
Yeah, no, I stand you, Billy. I agree with you on all of that. You know, as you were describing, and you're right. You know, I mean, I feel like I'm following my my purpose, my passion, but it is really my purpose. So yeah, I'm with you on that. So following your passion is just like, if you like to cook, you're going to open a restaurant. Holy shit, that's terrifying.
Yes, what a great example. What a great example. Because that's where we conflate passion with hobby. No, I'm interested in cooking. I like to cook. Well, here's the thing. If you like to cook, then cook. But if you want to turn it into a passion, you're probably going to learn the ins and outs of cooking. And I think another thing too that too often the follow your passion crowd, they insinuate that follow your passion means that you have to turn your passion into a profession, and you absolutely don't. You can be passionate about cooking and just cook for you and your family and your friends and not monetize it whatsoever. You can be passionate about playing the instrument of your choice and never ever turn and never become a paid musician. It's just something that you do every single weekend. It's something that lights you up. And if you are able to monetize it, more power to you. But sometimes a job is a job. And the purpose of that job is just simply to put money in your bank account so you can put food on the table. And I don't think that there's anything wrong with having a job that feels mundane, so long as in other areas of your life, you have things that do light you up. You do have passion. You have a sense of purpose. Maybe even your purpose isn't your job, right? But you have a sense of purpose and you do something that really lights you up outside of that. So it's okay for a job to be a job that just pays you. And I rail against this idea of the work-life balance too, because work is a part of life. So it's a life-life balance. We're not saying that work is 50% of your life and you're supposed to jam in all the rest of life in the other 50% of it. Now you look at it as a piece of pie, work might be a big chunk of it, but if it becomes too big of a chunk, then to me, I think you lose a sense of identity. It's why I never, ever, ever ask people, what do you do for a living? What do you do for work? Two reasons. One, like I said, over-identify with it. Having been in South Korea for a long time, titles are really important. And I recognize that they get caught up in not just South Koreans, but everybody gets caught up in their title and what they are.
Yeah, they do.
And the other reason I never ask that is it's easily the most boring aspect of who they are as an individual. It was always easy for me when I taught English because people say, "What do you do for a living?" I'm an English teacher. Everybody had one of me. Everybody knows what I do. But when you ask people now, like, "What do you do for a living?" And it's a very difficult, convoluted answer, and it really is just, it's like data analysis, whatever. It's not interesting. But tell me something about, where did you grow up? Tell me a little bit about that town. What were some of your most memorable childhood experiences? Those are, and you work your way up to those. You may not lead into that, but you're able to get to know someone on a deeper level and make a stronger connection and be more memorable. Because they're like, "Oh, you ask really good questions." And they too, in return, are also memorable to you. I'm not going to remember a data analysis, but I am going to remember someone who has a story. But how we ask questions, that's really a skill that is important for us to learn so that we can be more connected. And in connecting, we understand, and through understanding, we become more empathetic.
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly something that I can identify with in terms of, we were just talking about being podcasters, and I don't want to get all too meta, but I find that in doing these interviews, in talking to people about their stories and their lives, that is been so much that I, has given me so much knowledge and I don't know, understanding of myself in relation to everybody else as well. And you know, people come in with a story, you know, like yourself, you've got a story about, you know, your life, and it's fascinating. You know, you obviously were a teacher, and then you just went phew, and decided to become mindfulness coach and travel the world. And this brings me back to my next, the other thing I wanted to ask you about. So your podcast is called The Mindful Midlife Crisis. So let's just focus on this midlife crisis situation, shall we, for a minute? Because I feel like everybody has somewhat of a midlife crisis. Now, I think for women, and you know, I'm 54, so I'm pretty solidly in the midlife, I think. I'd like to think that I am. I think a 30-year-old will go, or a 20-year-old, yeah, you're way past that, mate, but still. What I'm trying to get at is I think that most women feel that their midlife crisis kind of revolves around the menopause and this sort of hormonal kind of like war that begins to happen within your body. And for men, excuse me, it's classically, it's around, you know, oh, I'm no longer young and virile, and I'm a bit saggy and a bit gray, and I need to buy myself a car and find a younger woman. Like it's all that kind of ridiculousness. So what does midlife crisis mean to you?
Yeah, so really what it comes down to, it does come down to that idea that you're going through these physical changes. You're going through these hormonal changes. Men are going through hormonal changes too. Nature has a really sick sense of humor because as men get older, they lose testosterone and they have more estrogen. Meanwhile, women lose estrogen. So they almost have what we call this postmenopausal zest. What's interesting is this idea of the middle-aged man buying the sports car and getting the 20-year-old girlfriend. It's actually not so much the case as women having this postmenopausal zest and saying, I'm done taking care of you and the children. Now I'm going to go do my thing. And what I think it's over 60% of divorces that are initiated by people over the age of 50 are initiated by women. It might be, yeah, something like that. So women get to that point where they're like, I'm out. I sacrificed enough to raise the children and raise you, and now I'm going to do my thing. It's so interesting being in this midlife coaching space, how many midlife coaches reach out to me who are women. And it's, I mean, it's no offense, and I'll talk about what I mean in this in a second, but it's almost like they're a dime a dozen. But here's the thing, is that from my point of view, women, particularly who the midlife coaches, they're understanding that, hey, we are social beings and let's rally around this postmenopausal zest. We have all of this energy now. We have all this excitement. We are really understanding a new purpose. Now that the kids are older, we have this new a sense of identity. And so they are coming together as a community. And this is something that I noticed is a huge difference between men and women, is that women are so much better when it comes to being a community.
That's true.
And men are still very much in competition with each other. So you don't see a lot of midlife male coaches. It's not the same in a number as I see with women. And that they're really banding together in that way. And what I'm seeing is that a lot of men just feel like, well, I've done it all on my own. I'll just continue to do it all on my own. And as they grow older, they become more and more isolated. And that is really to their own detriment. Because the longest running study on happiness conducted by Harvard says that community is what leads to greater amounts of happiness. So I'm hoping that you know, I don't know if you have a large male contingency. I'm guessing that you have a large female contingency, because in mindfulness, and to have a title like the Chakra Way, that's a woo-woo concept, or it's perceived as a woo-woo concept, right? Mm-hmm. And I understand that being in mindfulness, that I'm not going to have a lot of dudes that want to sit around and talk about mindful living, right? But so I like to bring that back around to, no, there's actually science around this, that when we practice mindfulness, what we're actually doing is we're building up the gray matter in our prefrontal cortex. And the prefrontal cortex is important because it regulates emotion. But not only does it do that, but it also cools and shrinks our amygdala, which is our animal brain, which is our fight, flight, or fright portion of our brain. So who doesn't want to be more emotionally regulated? I think that that's really, really important. So to the ladies out there who are listening, you know, share this episode with the men in your life, because it's coming from a dude who was so emotionally immature in his 20s and early 30s. It's hard for me to look back on it and just be like, oh my God, you're so obnoxious. You were the worst. And to now feel really secure in how I navigate my emotions and how I'm able to connect with people, I feel very comfortable in that. Yes, I'm an extrovert, but I'm also one of those extroverts. I'd much rather be in a group of 1,000 people. I like that kind of energy as opposed to 3 people.
Right.
So there's that piece of it. But, you know, I think it's really important for, you know, as we kind of figure out this, you know, you talked about the postmenopausal zest. What I think is really important to understand is that, you know, we have, like I mentioned, that nature plays this cruel trick on us. So if we are aware of that hormonal shift, then we can kind of navigate and recognize, oh, okay, I'm feeling this, and not blame it on the hormones and not try to attribute it to anything, but just understand, oh, this emotion is present. This is how I am feeling right now. And in doing so, we develop that self-awareness.
It's all about bringing yourself back into that present moment vibe, isn't it? It's that portion of mindfulness, just that end. But yes, you are so right about this midlife situation. And I think that there are a lot of men in their midlife who do feel like they've given everything, in the same way that women go, I've given everything to the kids and to my career, and I've done everything for everybody, and I've just given and given and given for my entirety. And now it's like, I can actually go, do you know what? I want to just do what I want to do. I've got this freedom now to do that. I think men have a similar thing, in that they feel like they've, you know, they've followed this path that the patriarchy has shown them is the right way for a man, you know, be strong, have a family, have a career, provide, be the provider. And then you hit your sort of whatever age, and you go, men and can go, oh my God, all I've done is actually provide for everybody else. And I'm this emotional desert. Like, I don't know what I think or feel, or, you know. And I agree with you, this so-called woo-woo, some people hate that term, I don't mind it at all, actually, but that it feels like a very feminine space. It feels like it's inhabited by strong women who are stepping into their feminine energy, that divine feminine energy. And that can be a little bit intimidating for a man who's feeling a little bit lost. So I get why that's, you know, it's difficult to draw men into this, but I think that they are genuinely really open to being happy in their own skins, to finding out who they are, you know, to finding, rediscovering what it actually is that makes them howl with laughter, to reconnect with their mates that they might have just had a beer and watched the sport with before, but actually realize they can talk about how they're feeling. It's a massive step, but if it's one that we can, that men are willing to make, it makes everybody so much more harmonized. I don't know. I do.
Yeah, no, I was just thinking about, men don't need to feel threatened if they are surrounded by strong women. Instead, seeing it as a compliment and not, and I mean, what I mean by compliment is that it completes. It's that idea that together we achieve more, right? Together we accomplish more. So, not feeling like, well, if I let a strong woman into a position of power, whether it's just even within the nuclear family, or whether it's in a corporate setting, or whether it's in business, or excuse me, whether it's in government, that rather than seeing it as a threat, what you're seeing it as is an elevation of society, an elevation of as people, that we are working together. Because just because a woman of power takes the lead, it doesn't mean that you're going to lose more opportunity. There is still going to be opportunity there. If you can work together, you can create more opportunity for more people to continue to build upon that. And it doesn't have to be this power grab that we so often see. So, how do we work together, like you said, harmoniously, so that we do? And I've never, I don't really like this idea of how we can be the higher self, or like that sort of thing. I'm not someone who uses that language, but in this case, how can we be a more powerful version of ourselves, a better version of
Version.
ourselves, and not just a better version of ourselves, but a better version of our community, of our society? And I think that really takes a willingness to collaborate and work together and listen and learn and not feel intimidated.
No, I think you're, yeah, it's a fascinating subject because I think as we go through the ages of our lives, there are so many different phases and influences and things that come up. And midlife is one of those weird ones where the younger generations kind of feel like, well, they're out of touch or whatever. But actually, in ourselves, both men and women, we feel at our most powerful. We've got the most experience, the most wisdom. We're like more likely to know ourselves better. There's this sort of coming together of like, oh, I'm finally getting it. I finally actually don't care what that person thinks about what I'm wearing or how thin or fat or gray or whatever I am. Like, I actually don't care because I now realize that that shit doesn't actually matter. There's a huge freedom there that is really powerful because it allows you to then step into into your purpose, not your passion, but your purpose.
And I do like that idea of, you mentioned like a younger generation. I remember having a conversation with somebody, and he was maybe about 5, 10 years older than me, and he had a real disdain for the younger generation. And he's like, "What?" And he had lived lives. Like, this dude was very well traveled, very well experienced, and it just kind of was dismissive that the younger generation had anything to teach him, that he had anything to learn from the younger generation. And I guess my response to that was that resistance is going to be met with their resistance.
Yeah.
You absolutely have something to offer. You have stories to tell for days, and I am sitting here with like my hand under my chin, like just eyes wide open, listening to your stories. These are incredible. But that does not come with age. That comes with lived experiences. I think about students who are 14, 15, 16 years old who are in my classroom, who had lived experiences that were far beyond anything that, you know, a privileged white kid from middle, small town Minnesota could have ever known. So to listen to them tell their stories, I really learned a sense of patience and compassion and empathy and understanding from their situation. And it taught me that, hey, everybody has value. Not everyone is special. You're special to your parents, but everyone has value some capacity. And I really think that if we are more open to listening to people of all lived experiences, that we're just a better society as a result.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And I think that, you know, it's that thing when you look back, if like this guy that you're talking about looks back and goes, oh, you know, they've got nothing to offer. Like, does he look back on his 20-year-old self and go, you had nothing to offer? Like, no, you were a kid. It's like criticizing a 5-year-old for throwing jelly across the room. It's like, no, you did that one day. You know, you did that as well. So we all grow. But listen, Billy, I want to sort of, because we've been chatting for ages now, and I feel like, you know, I've still got like 3 subjects here that I would love to talk to you about. But anyway, we'll get to those another day, maybe.
We can rapid fire them if you want to. I can be succinct.
Okay. So in which case I will do that then.
Let's hit them.
First one is the title is People Pleasing. Go.
Yeah. As an extrovert, I think I just want to make people like me. Like, I'm not gonna lie, like, I think that's really a big piece of it.
Don't we all want people to like us? Or am I know I'm aware I'm a people pleaser as well. So
to the extent that I compromise my own integrity. And so I think that's the piece that I'm working on and you know, barriers to. So I think it's really crucial that, hey, I do want people to like me. I want to be a likable person. But am I compromising my own integrity? Am I compromising my barriers? Mm-hmm. And the thing that I learned the most is that I no longer, or I try really hard to no longer extend my time and energy to people who do not reciprocate the same time and energy back into me. Mm-hmm. So I've had to stop myself from trying to continue on with relationships, whether they're romantic or whether they're professional or what, you know, what have you. People, if I'm putting a lot of effort into time and energy into keeping a relationship, but it's not being reciprocated, I'm getting more and more comfortable with letting those people go.
Okay, good. Next subject. Instead of a to-do list, you have a CHIPS list, C-H-I-P-S list. This must be an acronym for something. So hit me with that because I'm interested.
Yeah. So I actually talked about this during my meditate and mingle sessions that I led today. So CHIPS, I do not like to-do lists. To-do lists just keep you busy. There's no end to a to-do list. So I created this thing called a CHIPS list. The C stands for complete. What are the 3 to 5 things that you absolutely positively need to complete today? This does not include things like working out or meditating or eating. Those are lifestyles. Okay. Those are lifestyle choices. So or lifestyle habits, excuse me. But they are things that need to get done today, cannot wait until tomorrow. You want them done today. So nice. Then we go to H, and H stands for hooray. We celebrate what we have completed. Now, I always caution people, try not to use alcohol and food as your hooray, as your celebration, because it creates this tricky relationship with both of those things right there.
Indeed.
Yeah. We don't need to see alcohol as a treat. We don't need to see food as a treat. We see food as sustenance. We see it as what keeping us alive. And I don't drink alcohol, but I also don't demonize people who do drink alcohol. So, do what you got to do. Enjoy in moderation. IPS stands for in progress or start. If you have the mental bandwidth to continue on doing more things, you can go ahead and move the progress bar along, knowing full well that whatever you start is eventually going to end up in the complete column. Mm-hmm. So just know if you're going to start something, you darn well better complete it at some point in time too. So that's my chips list. That way you can identify the 3 to 5 things that need to get done today, rather than just saying, here are some things I can do today. These are some things to do. No. What needs to get complete?
Yeah, no, I love that. I'm a woman of many notebooks and many lists. And I have the way I do it is that I have a master list that lives over there far away. And then my to-do list on the day, I only ever try and get 3 things done because I think that's realistic. And sometimes there's only one thing that's going to get done if it's a big thing. And you're right, like the big pat on the back. Yeah, I got that done. Like, let's sit down and go, hey, that's pretty cool. I actually got that done. Well done, me. That feels really good. Is a really important part of it. So I love that. Celebrate.
And one of the hoorays, can I encourage people to, once you complete something that's on the complete list, is that a hooray can be do nothing. Yeah. That means don't check your email. Do not check social media. You just simply be present with whatever you're feeling with. Be aware of whatever you're feeling, that sense of accomplishment. I can't remember. I think it's called Hidden Brain. The podcast is called Hidden Brain. But they talked about how people taught you how to deal with difficult emotions. No one taught you how to deal with positive emotions. No one taught you how to enjoy ice cream. You just wolfed down ice cream and then you liked it. But what if you slowed down and you enjoyed the ice cream and you allowed that feeling of joy, of satisfaction to really settle in, to sink in? And you taught yourself what it felt like, what it meant to truly feel joy.
Really savor it. Yeah. Billy, listen, tell everybody where to find you and most crucially kind of what you offer, just in a short, like, what do you offer and where can people find you?
Yeah, so I just launched a brand new website. It's www.billylahr.com. It's LAHR. You can find all of my offerings there. I have online courses that you can check out. You can also go to www.mindfulmidlifecrisis.com. That's where the podcast is. And that's also where you can sign up for my weekly Meditate and Mingle session. So Meditate and Mingle, it's an online meditation, mindfulness practice that we do. We chat for about the first 5-10 minutes, and then we do a guided mindfulness practice. It's not just staring blankly at a computer screen. It's a guided practice. So that way you're not just, it's not just people watching you on Zoom meditate. So that could be a little creepy, but we do a 10 to 15, 20 minute mindfulness practice. And then after that, we do a discussion. What came up for you? What did you notice? What was challenging? And then how can we use this moving forward? So we do that. It's every Monday at 8 p.m. Central Time. Now, I know that you are in the UK or in European time. I also offer one that is at 8 p.m. Korean time, which I think is around noon.
Yeah.
In Europe, right around there. It's right around there. So if you are interested in joining that, you can shoot me an email at billy@mindfulmidlifecrisis.com. or give me a follow on Instagram, mindful_midlife_crisis. You can find me on LinkedIn too, Billy Lahr. I love knowing who listened to this conversation and found, and even if you're like, hey, dummy, I've got something to say about something that you said. I want to set the record straight. Email me. Tell me. I want to know. And not because I want to get into an argument, but because I want to hear your perspective. I want to know what I missed. And I actually appreciate that kind of feedback. So please let me know one way or the other, whether you love the episode or whether you have some questions. I'd love to hear from you.
Thank you, Billy. Thank you very much. Now, I don't expect my listeners to be starting beef with you because they're not that kind of folk. These people are cool. They're very nice. So, but thank you so much. It's been really fun. It's been really good to chat to you. So thanks so much. Thank you.
Yeah, this was a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me on.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.